I actually went to a Sikh like school. So it was like a religious school, like Sikh Academy. It was close by. And then my mom was like, you know, they do good education, this and that. And I like, you know, at first I don't really want to go because like there was like stuff you had to do, like as in maybe cover your hair and stuff like during the day. So I was born in Nepal, right? And then I think my dad came over, I think 1999 or 2000, and just a year or like on the year I was born. So I was, some people might feel insecure about talking about it, or like they're like, they might not want to put that kind of importance on money in front of their kids. Like they're like, you know, because, you know, money can be bad if you obviously go into the wrong path. But a lot of brands were getting like FOMO as well. They're like, you know, oh, we need to be on TikTok or like create content on TikTok. So if I have 100K, I'll charge like £100, for example. And like, that's what I've been doing since the start. But then obviously, you know, connecting with different creators and other fellow TikTokers within the same niche as well. I think the average now is like 1K per 100K. But like, you know, obviously people have that kind of view on TikTok about, oh yeah, it's like, you know, for kids or like people dance on it and stuff like that. So it's definitely been funny to hear those stories, but it's never been like, oh, like you need to get off TikTok, or, like you shouldn't be on there.
Welcome to the Valuable Podcast, where there is value in every conversation. I'm your host, Victor Sasanya, and today I am joined with Ash Thapa, TikTok content creator with over 345,000 followers. In this episode, we learn how to become a valued content creator and successfully monetize, as well as balance a university degree while staying consistent. Talk to me about your upbringing. What country are you from, and where did you grow up?
So originally I'm from Nepal. So I like, I was born in Nepal, right? And then I think my dad came over, I think 1999 or 2000, and just a year or like on the year I was born. So I was born in 2000. I was there with my grandparents till about, I was like 4 or 5. I'm not too sure on the numbers, but my mum went to England as well, like about 3 years after I was born. So I grew up with my grandparents for like the last 2 years I was in Nepal, and literally just been in West London since, and just grew up here, and you know, just been here since, and got a little brother. But yeah, that's the family.
Wow. And what's it like sort of relocating? Do you remember what it was like at that young age, around 4 or 5 years old?
Not really. I feel like a lot of people have like a lot of memories when they were that age, but I have like little flashbacks and stuff, but I don't remember much. Like even when I do go back, like, you know, I can remember certain things, but nothing like, you know, it's like, oh yeah, like I remember doing this when I was at that age.
Yes, for sure. And what's Nepal like?
I think it's like a pretty standard, like third world country type of vibe. Like, I don't know if you've seen like videos of like India or like, you know, surrounding countries like that, but it's nothing, you know, crazy. Like the roads can be rough sometimes, or like there's markets and stuff, but like pretty typical. It's definitely a nice place though. And, you know, definitely if you go to different cities, like the nature's great, you know, the views are great. And obviously the people are really like, you know, welcoming and stuff like that. So I think it's a great place to visit.
Of course. And growing up in Nepal, coming all the way to West London, I'm sure it was like a massive shift in culture.
No, it was good, man. Like, you know, it's a pretty, I think everywhere in London is pretty diverse. So, you know, growing up, always had like a group of diverse friends, and like, it was pretty calm. And like I said, I don't remember much from when I was actually moving across. So it wasn't like I was like a foreigner type of kid. I mean, maybe I was, just don't remember. But, you know, it was like a nice upbringing. I was always been like sporty and stuff. So like always playing for like the school team or just participating in those events. So that's really what I enjoyed when I was a bit younger, and like, maybe doing some like drawing and stuff as like hobbies. But yeah, that's about it for when I was in primary school, secondary school, and yeah.
And what secondary school did you go to?
I actually went to a Sikh like school. So it was like a religious school, like Sikh Academy. It was close by, and then my mom was like, you know, they do good education, this and that. And I like, you know, at first I don't really want to go because like there was like stuff you had to do, like as in maybe cover your hair and stuff like during the day. So there was those kind of restrictions, and you had to learn like certain culture stuff. And like, obviously at year seven, all my friends going to like this other school, and I'm going to like a you know, religious school. So I was like, not really happy, but then obviously made great memories there, friends, everything. So, you know, I'm grateful that I went there as well and like learned more about the Sikh culture as well.
No, that's actually really, really fascinating. And do you think that sort of shaped you? Because I think at that crucial age from year 7 to 11 is where we make lots of friends, is where we become aware, is where we grow. So, you know, going to a religious school, do you think that's had a great impact on your life in terms of what you're doing now?
I'm not too sure like how much it had to do with like it being a religious school, but you know, like just the people I was surrounded with, like, you know, I made a lot of mistakes, I made a lot of good decisions, and I think just from that, like I was able to learn a lot. And you know, like maybe there is like some sort of like backing towards like how it shaped me, but I wouldn't say there was anything like, you know, huge that I kind of noticed that was a different kind of vibe.
Of course. And was that where you went for sixth form or college or?
No. So sixth form, I actually went to another school. The first year, I chose like physics, biology and business, right? And I was just like, yeah, like this is fine. And then like physics sort of just knocked me out of the park. So then I had to drop that because initially I was going to go in for mechanical engineering or like civil engineering for uni. But like, and I was like, no, I'm going to change to computer science. I had a few like family members in that field as well. So I was like, yeah, you know, money's there as well. Like I'm kind of interested. I'd prefer this over engineering. So I changed like my subjects. So I had to do like an extra year before I went into uni. So yeah.
I'm just thinking, so sort of going to a religious school, then you went to a sixth form and you're really focused on doing computer science. When did finance come into the picture? Is this something you talk about on your TikTok, credit cards, tax, investing, personal savings? Is this something you picked up in school or did you sort of learn this by yourself?
No, I wouldn't say I picked it up in school. And I think it's just mainly like, you know, like being from like Asian culture and stuff, like I don't really have like that, like pocket money, you know, like it's like £10 a week, right? Like £2 a day. Kind of like just for food and stuff, like especially when I was in high school and stuff, and like maybe a bit more when I was a bit older. But I just wanted to have like my own money and be in like control of it, right? Not having to worry about like asking my mum for money or like asking my dad for money, and like they're like, oh, where did you spend this, and like why did you spend it on that? And it was just kind of that, like I went to like the how to make money online kind of thing, and just like for one search led to another, and it just kind of rolled into that kind of space.
Do you think that speaking about finance was sort of like a household topic growing up in a Nepal household, or was it like a taboo?
No, I think it's pretty taboo. Like even now, just in general, I think it's pretty taboo, to be honest.
And why do you think that is?
I'm not too sure. You know, I don't know. Maybe like some people might feel insecure about talking about it, or like they're like, they might not want to put that kind of importance on money in front of their kids. Like they're like, you know, because, you know, money can be bad if you obviously go into the wrong path. But I think there are a number of different reasons, but it's always been taboo in like my household anyway. It's like always a brief talk, or like never kind of like really dive in. But obviously once as I've gotten older, it has opened up a bit more, but I would say it's pretty still taboo, like generally.
So you've went on TikTok and you've built a name for yourself, right? Like I said, you're highly valued on TikTok with, you know, 345k followers, and this is will be growing by the time this podcast release. So talk to me about how do you remain relevant on TikTok, and how do you continue to post things that are value, that are actually teaching people?
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, the thing about relevance that you said is really more of like being consistent, like because I feel like personal finance is always going to be relevant, right? It's just like being in front of people's faces and consistently doing it, because, you know, some people might want to hear it in one perspective or another. So like with finance as well, there's not much you can really talk about. Like there's only so much, right, you can talk about. Obviously, if you go into like little cracks and stuff, there's loads about personal finance. There's only so much that you need to kind of like look over and take care of. So I think it's just kind of repurposing that into like different perspectives and like different scenarios where people might understand it this way, or some people might understand it like another way. You know, so like I've always been like, okay, like even if this video just helps one person, like I'll be happy.
That's really good. I want to actually touch on that. If this video helps one person, you'll be happy. Because I think that once we, content creators, should I say, once they post content, we can get caught up in something called vanity metrics. Yeah. And, you know, we're really fussed about the likes, the the story posts or the reshares, etc., we actually lose sight of why we're actually doing what we're doing and who is it meant to help. So it's really good that, you know, at the back of your mind, you're really focused on helping that one person. But I guess my question now is, like you said, there is a wide range of information available on the internet. We live in a generation through a Google search, I can get free information about personal finance. So I'm really intrigued to know, what is it about you? Why do people trust you on TikTok? Why do people follow you? Why do people listen to your content? Why do people share it?
I think the main reason, right, especially with like what I said about just trying to hit it from different perspectives, I'm just trying to be as authentic as I can and just be kind of like true, like just put it out there as it is. And obviously trying to make it simple as well, because, you know, you hear a lot of stuff, like, or even stuff you find on the internet, it might have a lot of like jargon, which you might not understand. So, you know, I just want to keep it like as simple as possible, but also complex enough where like it actually makes sense that, okay, like, you know, I can implement this myself, or like it's relevant to me. So I think that's the main thing about, well, me personally, that's what, in my opinion, just kind of be authentic and try and provide as much value as I can.
So talk to me about the process, the system, in order to provide that value. So do you sit down and just think about loads of different ideas in terms of content? Do you schedule a day in order to record, batch record those videos, edit? What is your system or process to ensure that you're being consistent on TikTok?
So I normally have like in my journal, right, like I'll be like, okay, like, cool, today I'm going to plan 3 TikTok videos, right? So then every day I'll plan like 3 TikTok videos, for example, on like, you know, a good week. Like, I haven't done that in the past week just because of like exams and stuff, but that's usually what I do. And then like on a Sunday, for example, like that'll be my recording day, and then I'll record all of the like the TikToks and then edit them, like just push them together. And then when I actually need to post it, I just add like the captions and like subtitles, whatnot, and just post it, to be honest.
That's really good. And I remember you tweeted something such as, before you started TikTok, that TikTok turns sort of irrelevant people into influencers. Do you think that was the case for yourself?
Yeah, like definitely. Because I think the main reason I saw TikTok and like kind of felt it towards TikTok was because of Gary Vee. And I think like, you know, just seeing like the different things, right? I'm not sure if, I think that was before I started TikTok, right? And I was just seeing like so many people blow up, and I was like this is actually crazy, like this is true. And a lot of people think the app is just for dancing, but like, you know, there's so much more being it being used for right now. So I think that's still true.
And do you look up to Gary Vee? For some people who are listening, they don't know who Gary Vee is. So who is Gary Vee? What impact has he had on your life, and why do you think that the information he's shared is of value?
You know, like a lot of people label him as like a motivational speaker, which he can be, but I think he's just like a really like true and big entrepreneur, like as a person, right? Like I think he dips his toes in everything, like, you know, from like recently NFTs to like creating content online, and he's a content king himself, right? Like if you see the amount of content he posts and stuff. So I think he's a really valuable person to like go to if you want to learn more about, you know, like social media, entrepreneurship, and like what's kind of relevant or even going to be relevant. Like he said TikTok was going to blow up. It blew up, right? And like he's had a lot of that kind of like track record in the past with a lot of different things. So I've always found him interesting and very authentic in my eyes.
Yes, I remember reading something about Gary Vee. He said something along the lines, I won't quote him specifically, but he said that he does speaking engagements for like 5 or 10 minutes, not for the money, but for the content, because he can chop that in 30 different ways. And I think he released the Gary Vee content model. I'm not sure if you've seen it, where he talks about how to actually take long content, make it into micro content, repurpose that content, and just have like one 10-minute video. He's posting across 16 different social media platforms. And of course, he says content is king. And I think that's very important. And you yourself are a great content creator. So what is your day like in terms of balancing university and being a content creator? Because you said, you mentioned that you had exams, so I guess that you study, and where do you study, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah, so I'm studying at Coventry University right now, and I'm in my final year studying computer science.
And computer science is obviously not a easy sailing degree, so how do you manage your time day to day? What does your calendar look like?
Like, so what I've done recently, maybe not in the first year or like second, like kind of year, maybe second half of second year, but like transfer up into blocks. So, you know, I'll do like a uni block, like the first half of the day or like second half of the day, depending on when my actual like scheduled lessons are. And then like for the like next 4 or 5 hours, I'll just focus on like the entrepreneurship type of, you know, quote, like, space and like the TikTok and stuff like that. Because initially when I started TikTok, it wasn't to be like, I didn't want to be a content creator. Like, it was just like, I'm just going to post because like I enjoy, you know, this type of content. I think I can provide value. I'll learn along the way. Like, I'm not an expert. And also like it can build my personal brand. So that was like the main motivation behind it. Like, it was never to be, I never thought I was going to be like a content creator or like label myself as a content creator, but obviously we're here now, so yeah.
Yes, you're here now on the Valuable Podcast. If you're listening, yeah, Don't forget to subscribe to our mailing list to get valuable insights from myself and Ash. But that's quite interesting that you never actually planned to be a content creator, because I'm sure some people are listening and they're thinking they have this grand plan of posting on TikTok and reaching 300-400k, right? They're looking at so many people's videos, such as yourself. They're writing down what makes it good, what makes it bad, etc. So to somebody starting out, do you recommend having such a focused approach into content creation, or do you think they should just get started and see where it goes?
I think, you know, that's definitely important about what you said, like, you know, having it noted down and stuff. Like, I've never done that before, like, you know, just to like put out there. And I think the important thing is just to get started. Like, literally, you'll learn more from getting started than actually writing down everything, like, in my opinion anyway. Because I feel like a lot of people with whatever it is, we can get into like a mode of like, or like a state of like analysis paralysis, where it's like, you know, you're overthinking it too much and like, okay, how can I make my first perfect TikTok? This and that, and like you just don't end up doing it, or like you just never kind of really build the momentum. So, you know, I've definitely been like a victim of that, and did that at the start, but just start out by doing it and you'll see what works.
Wow. Analysis paralysis. Let's break that down a bit. So what exactly is analysis paralysis? And you said that you suffered from it. So how do you actually overcome it?
So overcome it, but just by doing it, like literally just do it. Like, it sounds like cliche, right? Like, you hear it a lot, just do it, but literally just do it. But I think, you know, analysis paralysis is kind of tongue twister, but literally, I think because a lot of people look at themselves as like perfectionists or whatnot. Like, I don't know, maybe before you started this podcast, right? Like, you thought about, okay, cool, like the mic, the setup, like guests, like all these different kind of components, right? You think of doing it, like even on TikTok, you're like, okay, what type of content am I going to post? Like, do I need a system to like be consistent with it? Like, maybe a video camera, because obviously people are doing it now with like cameras and stuff. So like, just kind of thinking too much and like analyzing the situation too much, right? And it's like it paralyzes you almost, because you never end up doing what you said you're going to do, because you're doing too much of like this analysis. So yeah, I think that's a really big thing, and it's common in like different industries.
Yes, wow, that's so good. And just talking about the sort of TikTok industry and content creation, yes, you have a lot of followers on TikTok, and people esteem you of high value, but how much does that mean when it comes to actually making money from TikTok? Do you make any money from TikTok? If you do, how do you make money?
Yeah, so I think the main, like, there's two different, or like three different ways of like making money on TikTok, right? Because obviously you have the TikTok Creator Fund. I mean, they don't pay you like huge amounts, but you know, that's just one sort of like kind of income you can have.
Can you quickly break that down for me in case of people, yeah, who don't know what the TikTok Creator Fund is?
Sure. So it's just like, you know, once you're over like 10K, I think 10K followers, you can apply to be a part of this Creator Fund, which where TikTok pays you per like 1,000 views. And I'm not sure like the specifics, but you know, like they pay you a certain amount per like 1,000 views. And it depends on like, you know, it's not much. Like, for example, I think if I get like 500K views on a video, it will probably be like £10 or something like that. So it's not much compared to YouTube, right? Because if you're getting that much, like you're gonna get paid a lot more. But that's just one way of obviously producing income from TikTok. Second way is like brands, working with brands and like doing sponsorships. So I think that's the main way that influencers in general just make their money, right? So that's the second way, just promoting brands and like working with them. And I think the third way is just actually monetizing your audience. Like I've kind of like tried to do it, but not really at the same time because I didn't want to monetize, but I did like this budget tracker thing, right? And got people, like made it really cheap. But I just wanted to have like people have some skin in the game so they actually use it. Because I feel like budgeting is like something that's really boring for most people, and they're not really going to stick with it if they don't have something invested. But yeah, I think those are the three main ways of making money. And yeah.
What is your success like with the Creator Fund? I think you really touched on that, around 500k views, pay around £10. Then you got working with brands. So do you personally have brands reaching out to you? Do you go out and reach out to brands and say, hey, look, I've got this amount of following, this is my amount of engagement? And the third one was monetizing your audience in terms of actually trying to push out a product or service to them and get them invested in purchasing. So what's your success like with these three different sources of income?
TikTok Creator Fund, I've never really like paid attention to it or like thought about, okay, cool, like, you know, I'm gonna like sustain my life with the fund, right? Because I think you can do that with YouTube. Like YouTube will literally pay you, and like you can live your life off that. But you know, it's not a huge thing, so I haven't really paid much attention to that. In terms of brands and sponsorships, I've never actually reached out to brands, but I did, like, I think after a certain point, you know, I was getting like a lot of brands reaching out to me and asking to, you know, promote themselves on my TikTok or like make videos for them or whatnot. And, you know, I think a lot of brands were getting like FOMO as well. They're like, you know, oh, we need to be on TikTok or like create content on TikTok. So, you know, there's been quite a lot of success with that. But I think it depends on how you kind of charge as well, because, you know, there's different niches within TikTok as well. I'm obviously in like the finance entrepreneurship niche. And I think different type of brands come to you and like you have different rates in terms of what niche you're in. So I think the most success has been with that, because, you know, I never really wanted to monetize my audience anyway. Like, I don't know, like I just don't feel comfortable doing it. But yeah, I think the brands and sponsorship were the main things for me.
Perfect. So what's sort of the average amount in the finance and entrepreneurship niche on TikTok that one can get by doing a video for a brand?
Yeah, no, I'm glad you asked that, actually, because recently I've upped my prices as well. So initially I was doing like, I think £1, no, £10 or like £100 per 100K followers, right? So like if I have 100K, I'll charge like £100, for example. And like that's what I've been doing since the start. But then obviously, you know, connecting with different creators and other fellow TikTokers within the same niche as well, I think the average now is like 1K per 100K. So, you know, say you have 300K followers, the rate is 300K. I mean, sorry, 3K for a post, not 300K, but yeah.
No, that's definitely good to know. So a TikToker of around 300K followers can actually make 3K a post. And I'm sure that there's so much different creative posts you can make. So it's not just like one post. You could probably do maybe more than one or two for the same sort of client, if that makes sense. And I guess my next question is, for somebody listening and thinking, wow, that's amazing, that's a lot of income, more money than I've ever made, do you think it's too late to join TikTok and start building up a brand?
No, not at all. I don't think so. I think, you know, it's still got that virality about it. And anyone literally, like that tweet that you found, like, I think it can change anyone who's like, you know, might not feel that relevant to like someone, you know, micro influencer, if not like there's people with like 5-10K followers even generating income and brands reaching out to them, and they're making money through that. So, you know, I think it's definitely not late at all. Still pretty early, I'd say.
Wow, still pretty early. You're encouraging me to to quit the podcast and jump on TikTok. I guess my next question is, so TikTok, you're on TikTok and you have 345k followers, and you've mentioned YouTube quite a lot. One thing I noticed is that you have 308 subscribers on YouTube, but over 300,000 on TikTok. So talk to me about the conversion of followers from TikTok to YouTube. Are you struggling with that, or do you think that's a feasible route in order to increase your subscribers on YouTube and build your brand?
I think definitely it is a feasible route, like if you play it right. But I just haven't made YouTube a priority, right? And like that's my own fault. I initially wanted to be like, okay, cool, like that was my plan, right? Like move over my kind of TikTok followers to YouTube and like other platforms or whatnot. But YouTube was like, I never really kind of focused on it. And like, I enjoy watching like this type of content on YouTube, but I feel like I'm more, I'd like to be more hands-on. And with YouTube, like kind of talking to the camera or whatnot for like a couple, you know, much longer than on TikTok, a couple minutes is like, I would have to put a lot more time into it than I am doing now anyway, which I literally can't, or like I'm not prioritizing right now. Like it's not my main priority to be actually to do that. It's not my main focus. So I think that's been the main thing. I haven't really tried to push it like that. But, you know, there was one example of a video I uploaded. I made a video about it on TikTok, and that got like quite a lot of people coming across from TikTok to watch that video. So I think definitely there's like a lot you can leverage there, but yeah, it's just not really focused on it a lot, to be honest.
Sure. Now, I think you mentioned something really valuable there, and you're talking about your return on your time investment. So when it comes to TikTok, the amount of time you put into it, you get a larger investment than you do from YouTube. So do you think you'll ever sort of have a bigger brand on YouTube than TikTok? Because I've heard that TikTok is not for the long term. The longevity in it is questionable. And we definitely see competitors such as Instagram posting Instagram Reels. We see YouTube bringing out YouTube Shorts. So if I asked you, where do you think the success lies in the long term? What would you say?
I think just like diversifying the content, to be honest, but you know, definitely moving across to YouTube. Maybe not in the short term, but definitely in the long term, just kind of shifting over there, because obviously I'm still at uni, I'm going to be finished soon, but kind of shifting over to being more focused on creating content on YouTube. That's actually valuable, because I don't just want to put content out for the sake of putting content out, right? And especially on YouTube, I think it's a much harder grind than compared to TikTok to get that initial, you know, 1K followers or like whatnot. So definitely, I think once I start putting more focus and shift onto that, I think YouTube is definitely the long-term game, and obviously brand on TikTok, I mean on Instagram as well. So that's like the main kind of platform that I see at the moment.
Perfect. And I want to talk about your TikTok toolbox. So to create videos on TikTok and to be this content creator, do you use any other apps except TikTok to aid you with this? And if you do, please list them.
Yeah, I actually do. So recently I started using this video editor called Splice. You know, not affiliated with them or anything, but like I find it really easy to edit my videos on TikTok with them. So initially I just used to do it through the TikTok app, but that's literally the only like app I use.
So TikTok and Splice and that's it.
Yeah, that's it.
Wow, I mean, it's a powerful combo because we're seeing results. So that's very good. And you mentioned, of course, that you're still at university, and I'm really interested to know how studying computer science is going. So you've talked to me about entrepreneurship, you've talked to me a bit about content creation and how much income you can actually make from being a content creator, but of course all of this is part-time because you're a full-time student. So what does the next 2 to 3 years look like upon graduation? Are you going into tech? Are you going to be a coder? Are you going to take content creation full-time?
I think I'm definitely probably not going to go into like a job like after. I'm not going to say definitely, but you know, it's not in the plans, to be honest. But you know, I enjoy doing it. Like there's certain modules that I really enjoy, and I'm like, oh wow, like this is interesting, you know, I could use this in the future. Like that was another reason I kind of went into computer science as well, because it's like, even if I don't use the degree, right, like later down the line, like I'll have that experience. I know like coding is not really a thing, in my opinion, you need a degree for, because there's so many like boot camps available, and you can just like base off that. So I think I'm going to go into content creation a lot more, and just like work on other parts of my business and just really focus on that, to be honest, because I'm not really planning to go or too keen on like kind of working into a job after.
So you talked about businesses, and I realized you started a company called TSA Media. Can you talk to me a bit about that?
Yeah, so I'm in the process of building my, so I'm building a email marketing company. So, you know, just kind of working with e-commerce brands and like helping them generate money through emails or like keep more customer retention. And, you know, they don't really have to spend extra on ads and stuff like that. So that's kind of what I'm focusing on building and scaling.
In terms of emails, what made you venture into emails and using that in order to bring value to your clients?
Yeah, I initially actually started out, you know, trying to provide Facebook ads as a service because, you know, that was a huge thing and like you can get crazy returns if you do the ads right. But what I found was, you know, maybe obviously it was me as well not reaching out to the right people, but a lot of them didn't have the budget to spend like on Facebook. Because, you know, you need quite a decent amount. I wouldn't say like start with like £5 or something. You need a decent amount. So I saw that and, you know, just being in the space, I kind of found out about emails and like, you know, how that can generate a lot of revenue. Like literally, I think it's so underrated, especially with e-commerce stores, right? That it can generate up to like 40%, 50% of a whole store's revenue. So I've really found that valuable. I actually enjoyed like the whole email process and like kind of working with like Klaviyo, which is an email service provider, and just working with people to actually do that and, you know, bring in value for them.
Yes, you call yourself the email sensei.
Yeah. Just...
So talk to me, how did you become more valuable in terms of writing emails such that clients are literally willing to pay you, you know, a lot of money in order to do that? Because someone might think, you know, writing emails, really? Mm-hmm. But what's the type of income you can get from that?
Yeah, for sure. You know, I'm still like kind of starting out. So like I just got that email sensei name to, you know, just reserve the handle a bit. But, you know, I think it's really valuable, to be honest. Like emails, to be honest, in essence, is like just copywriting. So I think copywriting is a huge thing, right? Even if you write copy, like you're getting sold in terms of like when you see stuff, right? It's all copywriting. Like when you see product pages, like there's copywriting there. So there's text there that sells you.
What exactly is copywriting? Because I know that's not a common term that many people know.
Yeah. So I think copywriting is mainly like, you know, just literally the copy you see or like the text. Let me call it text because, you know, copy might be confusing, but text you see on like, you know, maybe like a sales page or like just on a website, right? When you go onto a website, you'll see like text about it and stuff. And that is called copy, right? So if you write good copy, it's obviously going to incentivize people to purchase more or like go down the website a bit more and more likely turn them into a customer. So I think that can be really powerful and it just translates across to your speaking as well. When you speak with other people, like within sales or even just like having relationships, like one-on-one, just like, yeah, just in terms of any relationship, to be honest.
Yes. No, I'm actually really, really interested to know, let's say that the Valuable Podcast, we're building our subscribers and our mailing list, and we want to write a newsletter filled of great value, or an email, should I say. What would you recommend? What are the sort of gems, the structures? How do you go about writing something with a great CTA? And what I mean by CTA, a great call to action.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting because, you know, I think there's a lot of similarities whether you're starting a newsletter or whether you're selling a product, right? Because the main structure that they kind of give is like, okay, like a header, like that's, you know, attention grabbing. So obviously within the newsletter kind of group, like whoever's on the list, you know, they're obviously interested in the stuff that you're already talking about. So I would probably start off by talking about certain topics that maybe they haven't listened to or you think that would be valuable to them, and just kind of being like, okay, like, you know, attention grabbing headline, the subject, that subject kind of leads them on to like read. So it makes them more curious about what's in the actual email. And then in the email, just have like a storytelling kind of thing. So not even like salesy or like kind of process, just like literally if you're having a conversation with someone, because that's what you're doing, right? You're talking to a person, not talking to another computer, right? So just doing that and kind of just raising their curiosity as you go so much that they want to click that call to action button. So like wherever it is, like learn more or like schedule a call with me, stuff like that. So I think that would be the main structure for a newsletter like that.
Thank you. And guys, that is how you get free information to apply it in order to increase the amount of value you provide. And thank you so much. I guess my next question for you is that someone will look at Ash and they'll think, wow, he does an enormous amount of things. Would you consider yourself a jack of all trades?
No, not at all, actually. I feel like I do not enough things. But, you know, some, like I have so many things going on in my head. I'm like, oh, yeah, like I want to try this out. But I think it's important to stay within one kind of like industry or one kind of skill and just focus on that, because you're going to learn a lot more doing that than trying to be the jack of all trades. Like, you know, it's good to have like a generic knowledge on like different kind of topics and stuff. But I don't think you're really going to be specialized in one specific skill if you don't actually focus on it, because I've done that myself, like, you know, just kind of in the entrepreneurship space and like trying to make money online, jump from like dropshipping to like Forex, like tried that as well. And like a number of different things, right? But actually sticking with it, or like sticking with a skill, I've seen the most growth and success doing that than rather than trying to try everything.
Yes, and I think you mentioned something which is really important there, because what I noticed from you, you spot opportunities. And before anyone can exploit an opportunity, they need to find it. If they don't find it, they need to create it. So how do you go about creating or finding opportunities in order to exploit?
I think the main way of finding opportunities as well is like by putting yourself in places where like the opportunity is going to be there. Now that sounds really like vague, but if you just kind of like, you know, dive into whatever space like you're interested in, right? Like you're going to start seeing opportunities. Like even when I started reading books, right? Like the stuff I learned from that book, I might have not have applied it or used it straight away, but then when I hear something, right, I hear it in a different perspective because of how that book changed my mindset. So then it's like, oh, like that's an opportunity for this, because like that's how it relates to like another certain thing, for example, right? So it's like you just kind of start seeing it in a different kind of vision, and opportunities almost come to you because you're like, you know, so into that space, or like you're diving in, you're always around other people who are also in that space, and your mind just starts working, really.
Yes, it sounds to me like you're telling people they need to be in the right rooms. So mm-hmm. if they're in the right rooms already, they get that flow of information, whether it's a book, whether it's an opportunity, and that all boils down to network. And I'm really a big emphasizer on networking. But besides from books, where else do you sort of get your information from?
Initially, it was obviously books, YouTube, a lot of YouTubers that watch like finance YouTubers or entrepreneurship, like trying to make money, and courses. So I've bought a lot of courses, paid for mentorships, and recently, you know, like I love podcasts, obviously, you know, I love listening to podcasts and audiobooks as well. So, I mean, audiobooks kind of in the same category, but those are like kind of my main sources.
So honestly, how much do you think you've spent on your personal development?
I'm not even too sure, but a minimum about 5k so far. But yeah, like that, you know, I'd have to like go back and kind of count, but around like minimum 5k.
And I don't ask that question to brag, oh, Ash has spent more than you in terms of personal development, because everyone's situation and circumstance is different. And like I said, there's a lot of free information out there. But I think sometimes you sort of have to pay for access to value, not even the value itself. And I think that's such a big gem. But on the topic of information and finance, do you ever feel like a fraud, like talking about finance and teaching people? Because I'm sure they might be 40-year-old, 20 years in finance, they're CFA, they're qualified, like they're big heavy hitters in the game, and they're thinking, who's this young boy talking about finance and he's got 300,000 followers? Like, do you ever feel like a fraud?
Yeah, definitely understand what you mean. I wouldn't put it as fraud, more of like imposter syndrome kind of thing. So, you know, it's like, oh, like you said, like there's literally qualified people talking about it, and like people aren't really listening, or like they don't have a huge following, right? But I only talk about things that I'm actually confident about, and obviously not like really in depth, like where it's to the stage like, oh, I should be a chartered accountant or something like that. But I wouldn't really tell people to do stuff. It's like, okay, cool. Like, this is a situation. Look at the situation and like try and just think about how you can apply it to yourself or in that sort of thing. And, you know, like I'm interested in myself. I'm not an expert by any means, but I'm learning as I go along. And I'm not going to put content out that I don't think is going to be valuable, right? So if it's valuable, I'm going to put it out. And, you know, it's not just like fake stuff or like made up stuff, right? It's stuff that's actually facts, because a lot of like financial stuff are like factual. It's not just based up on an opinion or something. So yeah, definitely had like imposter syndrome type of vibe. And like even talk to people who like, you know, like yourself, study finance or the finance is their actual job. And, you know, they've reached out to me and be like, oh, like, this is like great kind of content, you know, seeing it is great. And I'm glad you're doing something like this. So yeah.
No, that's really good. It sounds like you have a really good support system around you that supports you and help you. But have there been anyone that hasn't supported you on your journey? What are some of the struggles you sort of faced?
I'm not sure about not support, but like, you know, there's definitely people who've been like, oh, like, you know, you're like on TikTok. I don't really go out and tell people like, oh yeah, I'm on TikTok, or like I'm a TikTok creator or finance. But like, you know, obviously people have that kind of view on TikTok about, oh yeah, it's like, you know, for kids, or like people dance on it and stuff like that. So it's definitely been funny to hear those stories, but it's never been like, oh, like you need to get off TikTok, like you shouldn't be on there. But at the same time, I feel like it would be a different story if I wasn't at like maybe 300k followers, right? If I was still on 5k, they would be like, bro, what are you doing? Or like, I don't know, but that's just my thoughts.
Yes, I bet they're not talking now when you're getting 3k a post. they probably want some bring-ins. No, that's really good. And so what are you sort of working on next?
So like I said, I'm mainly focusing on, you know, building my agency, the email marketing. So, you know, just working on getting a team set up for that, because, you know, I don't want to spend too much time on it while I'm doing uni as well, because, you know, it is so important for me to get a decent grade and come out with a degree. You know, spent about 60k on it already on the degree, so like it's important to actually get that finished. And yeah, so that's my main goal. And after summer, well, after uni in the summer, probably just focus mainly on those two things, the email marketing and content creation.
Perfect. And for somebody listening that wants to be a content creator, really inspired by what you're doing, what's the one piece of advice that you'll leave with them?
Just get started, and you know, you'll see what works in your, like, whatever you're interested in. And literally just be consistent. So just get started and be consistent.
And if they had a backpack and they can fill 10 items into it to get started, what would you put? So you can include books, you can include apps, you can include people.
Interesting.
What would you put?
So this is for content creation.
Absolutely.
Literally something to record with, whether it's a phone, camera, whatever you got. You don't even need a tripod, to be honest, but I'll throw a tripod in this and says 10. And definitely read Rich Dad Poor Dad if you haven't read it. Look into like different YouTubers. I can't put them in a backpack, but you know, just books. I think the books are the main thing, since you can definitely put that in. And
what type of books?
That, like, personal development and like personal finance books, because I feel like they go hand in hand, right? Because if you're gonna try and go into like entrepreneurship or like business, right, you're gonna need to handle finance at one point. And if you can't handle it, like, you know, you're gonna lose it, or it's gonna be 10 times harder for you. So personal development and like personal finance books, I think I'd definitely recommend. So Rich Dad Poor Dad, like I'll Teach You to Be Rich, Think and Grow Rich, Atomic Habits was really powerful as well. So, you know, I'll just leave those books for now, but I don't know how many items that is. I think got
no,
like seven.
No worries. What we'll do, we'll actually, we'll get you to write that out, and we'll put it into our weekly newsletter. So if you are not subscribed to the Valuable Podcast, please make sure you do. You'll find the link below this episode. And last but not least, Ash, where can they find you? Where can they follow you, support you, and learn much more about you?
Yeah, sure. So my socials are all the same. So Ash S. Thapa. So, you know, I'm on TikTok, Instagram mainly. So those are my like two main pages. So, you know, I'll respond to DMs and stuff on Instagram. So I'm an open book on there. So feel free to reach out, and I'll be happy to help where I can.
Perfect, perfect. Thank you so much, Ash, for coming on the Valuable Podcast. You've been very, very valuable and dropped a lot of information and gems for us, and I wish you all the best.
Thank you for having me on. You've been a great host.
Thank you for listening. If you like this episode, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts and follow us on social media at Valuable Podcast. Last but not least, for exclusive detailed content, sign up for the weekly newsletter at www.valuablepodcast.com. Remember, increase the value you provide and you'll rise in due time.